Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the latest deadlock in Washington as House Republicans refuse to go along with a bipartisan Senate bill passed 89-10 that would extend the payroll tax cut for 2 months. Washington Post columnist and executive editor of The American Prospect, Harold Meyerson, joins us to explore the motives of House Republicans who once again will not accept compromise unless all of their demands are met. Then, with our intelligence community knowing very little about North Korea's leadership and uninformed speculation continuing in the press, we get a very different analysis of North Korea from B.R. Myers, who was a professor of international studies at Dongseo University in Busan, South Korea, and the author of The Cleanest Race, How North Koreans See Themselves and Why It Matters. He argues that the dynastic dictatorship in North Korea is not a far-left communist regime, but is in fact more of a right-wing fascist monarchy like Imperial Japan was under Emperor Hirohito. Then finally, we will look into what the Iraq War was all about and how one foreigner, who was all the while working for America's most ardent enemy, conned the world's greatest power into a war that it will always regret and continue to lose. Richard Bonin, a five-time Emmy Award-winning producer for 60 Minutes and author of Arrows in the Night, Ahmad Chalajwi's Long Journey to Triumph in Iraq, joins us to tell the tale of the real architect of the Iraq War, who the neocons championed as he manipulated America into an unnecessary and counterproductive war that only he and his Iranian masters benefited from. Joining us now is Harold Meyerson, an opinion writer for The Washington Post, where he writes a weekly political column. He's also the executive editor of The American Prospect and previously was the executive editor of The LA Weekly. Welcome to Background Briefing, Harold Meyerson.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ian.
And once again, we have not so much a government shutdown, but a very uncompromising House caucus that refuses to go along with a bipartisan agreement that the Senate voted on 89-10. And now the president is calling them out, saying this is not poker. They won't take a vote, will they, on this bill?
They will not. They won't vote on the payroll tax deal extension itself because, quite rightly, they think this will render them electorally vulnerable if they vote against it, because this will mean raising taxes of a household, say, that makes $50,000 by $1,000 a year, which will be an amount taken out over one's paychecks. Rather than do that, they passed a resolution demanding that this process go to conference committee. In other words, they know that there was enough risk in their position that they tried to mitigate their position by not voting on the compromise that the Senate had passed itself, but punting, and it pretty much got the same kind of vote. I mean, they got pretty much a party line vote. There were a handful of Republicans who crossed over and voted with the Democrats against setting up yet another conference committee, but only a handful.
Well, it seems, though, that their argument makes absolutely no sense if they're saying that this 2 month extension that costs $33 billion is not enough, and they want to have a year-long extension that would come out at about $200 billion. And all the while, the real argument is about how do you pay for it, and once again, the House Republicans are going to the mat for the millionaires and billionaires.
Yes, but it's actually more than that. To begin with, they Dave Camp, and who heads the House Ways and Means Committee for the Republicans, and others were against extending the payroll tax as recently as 6 weeks ago. Then they switched when they realized this was a politically untenable position. Now they are maximalists on this, but it's not only that they want to avoid the millionaires' surtax, which actually the Democrats have already dropped. That's not part of the compromise. They have appended their own utterly extraneous bill, which is to speed the government's okay of the Keystone XL pipeline, which the Obama administration has shunted off any decision on for over a year. So they have appended what they think is a wedge issue that will they enable them to cast the administration as opposed to job creation, or blacken the administration's name with the environmental community. Actually, the Keystone XL pipeline is going to create about 6,500 construction jobs over a two-year period and maybe 50 jobs thereafter to maintain it. It is hardly a huge, in the national scheme of things, a huge job-generating project, but they think this is will give them some leverage. I might add, I think they're really wrong in terms of the way this is going to play out in public opinion, but we shall see.
But I thought, though, that they were using the Keystone XL pipeline as political cover, because at that point the deadlock was over how to pay for the extension. The Democrats wanted a modest surtax on millionaires and billionaires, and the Republicans rejected that.
The Democrats have already abandoned.
I know they folded. They fold all the time, Harold. there's nothing. But what also is at stake here is an extension of the unemployment insurance benefits and a stopgap measure to prevent automatic cuts to doctors' Medicare payments. But my understanding is that in the House bill, which the House wants the Senate to revisit, which the Senate struck out, the House Republicans put in more poison pills than the XL pipeline. They put in a provision to gut pollution controls and mandate drug tests for those collecting unemployment insurance.
And a provision to cut the maximum time one can receive unemployment insurance from 99 weeks to 59 weeks. So that's a major thing too. Now I'm not sure they really expect to get many of these. They are just their theory is whatever they can throw in the wall, whatever sticks that they can get, they will push for. And it's pretty clear that John Boehner, the House Republican Speaker, did not expect this, but it's also increasingly clear he does not control the caucus. And the number two Republican in the House, Eric Cantor of Virginia, really is the real head of the conservatives. Well, they're all conservatives, of the insane conservatives in the caucus. And that's the majority. And Boehner, who had basically given Mitch McConnell in the Senate carte blanche to cut a compromise, then had to backtrack. And he tried to sell this, apparently, in the phone call to his caucus over the weekend, and he was rebuked by his own caucus.
Well, Boehner apparently originally described the Senate vote as a good deal and a victory in a conference call. And then I guess once he came up against the Tea Party people, he hit this wall. And I thought another part of the reason why they didn't want to vote on it is that they're not really quite sure whether, in fact, they will get a majority. All Democrats, of course, voted against it, but they peeled off a couple, but they may peel off some more. They only need 26.
Right. There are splits in the Republican Party on this, at least four Republican senators, including Richard Lugar, who has been in the Senate forever. Have criticized the House Republicans for not backing the compromise. All four of the senators are up for re-election this year, and there are plenty of House members who might blanch at this as well. And this is in the context of a Gallup poll coming out Monday in which Congress's approval rating was at an absolute all-time low, 11% approval, 86% disapproval. That's really breathtaking.
Well, one of the senators is up for re-election and is vulnerable. Scott Brown in Massachusetts came out very strongly against the Republican House.
Right, as did Dean Heller in Nevada. Lugar is up for re-election. And the fourth, whom I cannot at the moment remember. But, yes, they were all
Olympia
all
Snow,
the four,
yeah.
Yeah, all the four who chastise the House Republicans are up for re-election, and that suggests that there's some trepidation on the Republican side, even in the House, that to be seen as opposing the ongoing reduction of the payroll tax is political bad news.
Well, so is this a case that the feckless Democrats have pulled their chestnuts out of the fire thanks to the inflexibility and the zealotry of these Tea Party Republicans?
It may be. I mean, folks like us have been continually saying the Democrats really have to draw a line and stop caving. And I think they may have reached the point. Harry Reid has sent the Senate home. Barack Obama says this is it. They got to pass what the Senate passed, or the consequences will follow, and the Democrats will run on this issue. And I think the Democrats have decided that this is something of a win-win. Either they're the compromise, which is a compromised win at best, but either the compromise prevails, or the Republicans have handed them a very good issue to run on.
Well, just in closing, Harold Morrison, do you think that they're going to fold? I mean, they're not used to reality. Reality doesn't intrude on a lot of those people.
Do I think the Democrats are going
to fold? No. At this point, it's up to the House to fold, right?
I don't know. You're right. They do not live in the reality-based community. I think, but this is the kind of issue on which they can be hammered day after day in their districts. And that the Obama campaign, the DNC, the House Democratic Political Committee will do that. So I think this is one of those things that is not going to go away if they fail to reach a deal. It's just going to grow as an issue. And I think at some point the Republicans will have to fold. But when that point will come, I have no idea.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Harold Morrison.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Again, I've been speaking with Harold Morrison, who's an opinion writer for The Washington Post, where he writes a weekly political column and is also the executive editor of The American Prospect. And previously, he was the executive editor of The LA Weekly. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll go to Seoul, South Korea to get a very different view of what makes North Korea tick.
Every crack, anybody wanna tell it like it is to each other, like you would to a sister or a brother. It could be said, Cosmo.